So today, seeing it is Gita Jayanti, we'll read from Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we'll read chapter 1, verse 1. And then we'll also read chapter 18, verse 78, which is the last verse. These tie Bhagavad Gita together, you could say. They're the context within which Bhagavad Gita is spoken. Dhritarashtra-vacha Dharma-kshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yayotsaraha Mamaka Pandavash Chaiva Kim Akordavata Sanjaya Dhritarashtra Vacha Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yuyotsavaha Mamaka Pandavaschaiva Kimakurvata Sanjaya Dhritarashtra Vacha Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yuyotsavaha Mamaka Pandavaschaiva Kimakurvata Sanjaya Dhritarashtra Vacha Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yuyotsavaha Mamaka Pandavaschaiva Kimakurvata Sanjaya. Dhritarashtra said, Dharma Kshetre, in the place of pilgrimage, Kurukshetre, in the place named Kurukshetra, Samaveta, assembled, Yuyotsavaha, desiring to fight, Mamaka, party.
My party.
Sons.
Yes.
Pandava.
Pandava.
The sons of Pandu.
The sons of Pandu.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
Eva.
Eva. Certainly.
Certainly.
Kim.
Kim.
What?
What?
Akurvata.
Did they do?
Sanjaya.
Sanjaya.
Oh, Sanjaya.
Oh, Sanjaya.
Dhritarashtra said, Oh, Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Bhagavad Gita is the widely read theistic science summarized in the Gita Mahatmya, the glorification of the Gita. There it says that one should read Bhagavad Gita very scrutinizingly with the help of a person who is a devotee of Sri Krishna and try to understand it without personally motivated interpretations. The example of clear understanding is there in the Bhagavad Gita itself, in the way the teaching is understood by Arjuna, who heard the Gita directly from the Lord. If someone is fortunate enough to understand the Bhagavad Gita in that line of disciplic succession without motivated interpretation, then he surpasses all studies of Vedic wisdom and all scriptures of the world. One will find in the Bhagavad Gita all that is contained in other scriptures, but the reader will also find things which are not to be found elsewhere. That is the specific standard of the Gita. It is the perfect theistic science because it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The topics discussed by Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya, as described in the Mahabharata, form the basic principle for this great philosophy. It is understood that this philosophy evolved on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is a sacred place of pilgrimage from the immemorial time of the Vedic age. It was spoken by the Lord when he was present personally on this planet for the guidance of mankind. The word Dharmakshetra, a place where religious principles, where religious rituals are performed, is significant because on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present on the side of Arjuna. Dhritarashtra, the father of the Kurus, was highly doubtful about the possibility of his son's ultimate victory. In his doubt, he inquired from his secretary, Sanjaya, what did they do? He was confident that both his sons and the sons of his younger brother Pandu were assembled in that field of Kurukshetra for a determined engagement of the war. Still, his inquiry is significant. He did not want to compromise between the cousins and brothers, and he wanted to be sure of the fate of his sons on the battlefield. Because the battle was arranged to be fought at Kurukshetra, which is mentioned elsewhere in the Vedas as a place of worship, even for the denizens of heaven, Dhritarashtra became very fearful about the influence of the holy place on the outcome of the battle. He knew very well that this would influence Arjuna and the sons of Pandu favorably, because by nature they were all virtuous. Sanjaya was a student of Vyas, and therefore by the mercy of Vyas, Sanjaya was able to envision the battlefield of Kurukshetra, even while he was in the room of Dhritarashtra. And so, Dhritarashtra asked him about the situation on the battlefield. Both the Pandavas and the sons of Dhritarashtra belong to the same family, but Dhritarashtra's mind is disclosed herein. He deliberately claimed only his sons as Kurus, and he separated the sons of Pandu from the family heritage. One can thus understand the specific position of Dhritarashtra in his relationship with his nephews, the sons of Pandu. Shishi Radha Golokananda Kija. As in the paddy field, the unnecessary plants are taken out, so it is expected from the very beginning of these topics that in the religious field of Kurukshetra, where the father of religion, Sri Krishna, was present, the unwanted plants like Dhritarashtra's son, Duryodhana, and others would be wiped out, and the thoroughly religious persons headed by Yudhisthira would be established by the Lord. This is the significance of the words Dharmakshetra and Kurukshetra, apart from their historical and Vedic importance. We will also read the last verse, because it is the actual answer to this question appearing here in the first verse. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Partho Dhanurdhara Tatra Shriyar Vijayo Bhutir Dhruva Nityar Matiramama. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namini. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachyade Shatarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasani Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we had our Bhagavad Gita program last night, Gita Jayanti program, and some people from some other religious bodies were there, and they, two of them, and they tried to say something about Bhagavad Gita. Fortunately, we were able to say something first, and we tried to make fairly clear as we could, what is the essence of Bhagavad Gita, what is the message of Bhagavad Gita, because we were afraid that when the others spoke, on one on Karma Yoga as the message of Bhagavad Gita, the other on Jnana Yoga as the message of Bhagavad Gita, we were afraid people would become confused. So we tried to make it clear from the outset what really is the essence of Bhagavad Gita, which is that we should all become devotees of the Lord. We should all, everyone should surrender to Krishna and become his devotee and become his pure devotee. This is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. So we tried to make it clear And at the end I was feeling a little guilty or a little concerned that maybe I tried to make it a little too clear, because, you know, they're very Hindu people and they're not so fixed up in this idea of what really is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. So I was feeling a little, you know, should I have spoken in that way or just been a little milder? But then those two other people spoke, and they were so confused, and spreading their confusion with, particularly the first one was somewhat enthusiastic about it. Second one was fairly sleepy. But then I felt, yes, good. I'm glad we made it fairly clear from the outset, because, sure. Yes, so many people that misunderstand Bhagavad Gita. It is certainly much more misunderstood than it is understood. And one of the people made the point that there are something like 200 and something versions of Bhagavad Gita in English, a point which Prabhupada made when he first came to America and presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. Actually, in fact, Haridev Prabhu had made the point in his welcoming address that even though there were so many versions of Bhagavad Gita available in English, by the time Srila Prabhupada came to America and presented Bhagavad Gita as it is, but unfortunately, not one of them had produced one devotee of Krishna. Rather, every one of them had increased the confusion that Lord Krishna was trying to dissipate and do away with when he spoke Bhagavad Gita. So it's a sad situation. In the name of Bhagavad Gita, people are being turned away from Bhagavad Gita. It's tragic. It's truly tragic, actually. So, what is the message of Bhagavad Gita is described here. If we connect these two verses together, the very first verse and the very last verse, we have to understand what is there in the mind of Lord Krishna, what is his idea, and in the mind of Sanjaya, who is a disciple of Vyasa and himself a great devotee. Otherwise we end up with Srila Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita as it is, yatha rupa. All the other Bhagavad Gitas, they are Bhagavad Gita as it isn't. Yes, you know, if you want to know what Bhagavad Gita is not, just read those versions. Bhagavad Gita as it isn't. Bhagavad Gita as I think it is. Bhagavad Gita as I would like it to be. Bhagavad Gita as my grandfather told me. Bhagavad Gita as my mother-in-law told me. Oh. Yes, it is a dangerous, actually it is a treacherous ocean. That's what it is. It's a treacherous ocean, not just dangerous, but treacherous. You have to really watch out. So, Sanjay, he is the disciple of Vyas, as we read. Srila Prabhupada states here, and he's a very great devotee. By the mercy of Vyas, not just by some mystical power, but by the mercy of Vyas, he had that special vision to see what was going on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He was sitting in Hastinapur. But by the mercy of Vyas, he could see. And then he spoke all of this as he witnessed it. And then Vyas wrote it down or had it written down. Vyas had it written down. So we should understand, among many other things, but one thing we should understand is that in Bhagavad Gita, this connection between the first verse and the last verse, in other words, that the last verse is a pronouncement about what is Bhagavad Gita, actually. This is confirmed by Vyas. This is accepted by Vyas, actually. He is in agreement that yes, what Sanjay has said here to conclude Bhagavad Gita, these are the right words to finish Bhagavad Gita on, to conclude it and bring it to its conclusion. So, as Srila Prabhupada points out here, in the first verse, Dhritarashtra is inquiring from Sanjaya, what's happening? What did my sons and the sons of Pandu do on the battlefield? And, well, Dhritarashtra, he is trying to ask, he is actually asking a different question, really, but he's trying to do it in a somewhat cultured way. He's not really asking, what did they do? What did they do? Did they sit down and have a cup of tea? Did they talk about the weather? Did they ask, how is your family? And of course they didn't do that. What did they do? They fought. That's already foregone conclusion completely. Totally foregone conclusion. So really what he's asking is, what was the result? Who won? This is what he's asking. Who won? Who's going to win? And Sanjaya, to conclude Bhagavad Gita, he gives very clear pronouncement, statement, as it is, that. But he also does it in a very nice way. He does not just rub it in to the face of Dhritarashtra, so to speak, that your sons are all going to be killed, you're going to lose everything, everything you stand for is going to be smashed into the ground. You are finished. Tough luck. He doesn't express himself like that. As Dhritarashtra is trying to say in a sort of roundabout way. So Sanjaya also says, he gives the answer, the clear answer, in a somewhat roundabout way. Because to be the bearer of bad tidings, according to Vedic standards, is not nice. If you have to give some news, give good news. If you have to give good news, do it in a sort of, in a way which softens the impact of the blow, something to that effect. So this is what he's doing. He's not saying in as many words as he knows is the case that you are finished and your sons are finished. You're not going to see them again. They're going to be wiped out, totally destroyed. But Sanjay says very nicely, well, my opinion, Matir Mama, what my mind thinks, my opinion is that, oh, wherever you have Krishna, Yogeshwara, who is the master of all mystic powers include all non-mystic powers. Srila Prabhupada makes this clear in Nectar of Devotion. That people who have mystic powers, particularly people who have all mystic powers, who really, really have mystic powers in in very big ways. People who have mystic powers, they have the power to do things which people who do not have mystic powers can do, but in gross ways. Prabhupada mentions, penetrate a mountain, pass through a mountain. Sometimes people, materialistic people, they make tunnels through mountains under the English Channel, or I read not long ago, some people just made the longest tunnel of all. It's something like 40-50 kilometers long, something like that. Big celebration. Just see, by our engineering strength, what we did. But someone with mystic powers can do that. Pass through a mountain in a second. And so many things. Someone without mystical powers can understand what another person is thinking, in many ways at least, by body language, by questioning the person scientifically. Even if the person is trying to hide information, they will be able to find out so many things. But a person with mystic powers can simply enter that person's mind and know exactly what they're thinking without having to go through any really time-consuming or demanding exercise. So people who have mystic powers can do what people who don't have mystic powers can do, but much more easily and much more. And then they can also do things which people who don't have mystic powers can't do. And Krishna is the Yogeshwara. He is the master of all the yogis, of all the people who have mystic powers. So in other words, wherever Krishna is, you can be sure that what is going to happen there. Am I making a mistake in doing that? I don't have mystical powers. Otherwise, I could just amplify my voice. But Krishna is the master of the masters of mystical powers. Whatever he wants to happen, it's going to happen. And there's not any question of even a fraction of 1% of there being any real room for doubt. And of course, it was well known what Krishna wanted. And Yatra Partha Dunodara, wherever there's Arjuna, the great bowman, that Arjuna's great warrior, who can defeat him? So that point is there, Sanjaya's making. He's a great warrior. Who's going to be able to beat him? But the thing is, the real point is, Arjuna is a devotee. The situation happens to be a battlefield. And Arjuna is a warrior. And the question is, what is the outcome going to be? But by the same standard, this principle, what is going to happen in any situation in the life of a devotee where they're faced with some challenge, in any field, in any sphere of life, that wherever there's Krishna and wherever there is someone like Arjuna means a very, very sincere and dedicated devotee. then whatever the result is going to be the result that Krishna wants. And of course, Sanjay says, Dhruva, Tatra Shriya, Vijaya, Bhutya, there'll be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, morality. So in this case, we're on a battlefield. But sometimes Krishna may not want the devotee to be victorious in material terms, just like the Pandavas had been in exile for so many years. They were sent into exile. Krishna was aware, and surely someone appealed to Krishna, please do something about it. This is unjust. Krishna did not do something about it. He waited. Eventually, right now, he's going to do something about it. But initially, Krishna apparently did not do something about it. He let it happen. That was his desire at that time. Let them go into exile. And different things will manifest, different points will come out. One point Srila Prabhupada makes elsewhere about Krishna allowing the Pandavas to be sent into exile, lose their kingdom for some time, and apparently not do anything about it at all for some time. One point Srila Prabhupada makes elsewhere is that Krishna, he wanted people to see how a devotee deals with extreme difficulty. Because in the minds of the common people is the idea, what is the purpose of God? What is the duty of God? His duty is, when the devotee gets into difficulty, to solve the problem, preferably immediately. This is the idea. Whenever anything goes wrong, Hare Krishna, or whatever it may be, and we expect Krishna just to put things right, or Lord Shiva, or Ganesh, or Durga, or Bhadrakali, or whoever it may be. My idea, who is God? They must immediately put things right. This is their duty. But we see in so many ways in the pastimes of the Lord that the Lord does not necessarily accept this as being his duty to just immediately put things right whenever any devotee is faced with difficulty, but rather the Lord, for various reasons, under different circumstances, the Lord may allow his devotee, even great pure devotees like the Pandavas, like Mother Sita, like Haridas Thakur, and other great, great devotees, he may allow them to go through even some extreme and deadly difficulty because he wants to show something. Not because he is unable to address the situation. Certainly not because he doesn't mind if his devotee goes through some suffering. But, anyway, it depends why. But, in this case, Srila Prabhupada mentions elsewhere, because this material world is full of so much difficulty, and you, whoever you are, everybody is going to have to face some of that sometime. So we need to see a perfect example of how to deal with that in Krishna consciousness, in a humble mood, and remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, completely unwavering. So like this, and then ultimately how in the long run, of course, the Lord arranges everything for the victory of his devotee. So here Sanjaya is giving the conclusion with the endorsement of Vyas as the actual compiler and the scribe or in charge of the recording of all the Vedic literatures, including Bhagavad Gita, that the fact is that wherever Krishna is, wherever the devotee is, situated at the lotus feet of Krishna, then there'll always be victory, power, opulence, morality. All auspiciousness will be there. Even if the devotee has to tolerate something for some time, but ultimately everything will work out by the arrangement of the Lord. So therefore, Dhritarashtra, just understand that your plans are going to, everything is going to fall to pieces. And we see in the beginning of Mahabharata that the first chapter of Mahabharata is the lamentation of Dhritarashtra after the battle of Kurukshetra. And he gives hundreds of statements how he knew it was going to work out as Sanjaya said. That when this happened, I already knew we were going to fail, is some hundreds of statements he makes. Some hundreds of statements he makes about how when this happened, I knew we were going to fail. Then that happened, I knew we were going to fail. Then something else happened, I knew we were going to fail. Then another thing happened, I knew we were going to fail. Then some other thing happened, and I knew we were going to fail. Shishi Radha Golokananda ki. And just again and again and again and again and again and again and hundreds of things he says. When this happened, I knew we were going to fail. So of course the question arises: if you knew you were going to fail, why didn't you stop before you failed and try and put things together in a more suitable way? But there again, we see it's also exemplary. The determination of the materialist, the determination of the materialist, they can go on for many, many lifetimes trying to succeed, but failing to succeed, but continuing to try to succeed. And so Dhritarashtra is such an excellent example of that. So everything, in one sense, everything which has been reported by Sanjaya as he is speaking to Dhritarashtra there, this whole discussion of Bhagavad Gita is in the context of Sanjaya reporting to Dhritarashtra. Everything that he is reporting, the way he is reporting it, it's all in this context of supporting his conclusion. In so many ways, making it clear that you have to take shelter of Krishna. There is no good program other than taking shelter of Krishna. There is no good activity other than ultimately devotional service to Krishna. any form of yoga only finds its completion in surrender to Krishna, in bhakti yoga. Even any form of yoga connecting with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it doesn't become complete and solid until it's there under the umbrella in the context of bhakti yoga, of devotional service. And ultimately the only way to get the mercy of Krishna is to be his devotee. If you're his devotee, if you're trying to be a devotee of Krishna and devotee of the devotees of Krishna, then your life becomes auspicious. Otherwise, your life cannot really be auspicious. So this is the message of Bhagavad Gita. This is the essence of Bhagavad Gita, that we should become devotees. And then we come to Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining more clearly how to be a devotee. What does it mean? And the intricacies, the details of actually carrying out this program of being a devotee. And also in detail, the problems which arise if you're not a devotee. Srimad Bhagavatam gives so many examples of so many people who are in different types of special situations, but through devotional service, they perfected their lives despite their special situations. Like Prahlad Maharaj, he was in such a special situation, being harassed by his father, who was such a special person, the original demon, the founder Acharya of the demon Sampradaya. So there's Prahlad Maharaj. He's only 5 years old. You do not expect much of a five-year-old child. But still, he was such a devotee that first of all, he was protected by the Lord through so many horrible situations. And then the Lord appeared to kill the demon and completely save Prahlad. So what a wonderful example. Ajamil, so sinful, so extremely sinful, and his performance of devotional service was so limited, hardly it was devotional service. Really, it was just Nama Bas, which is a mixed type of activity. But despite everything, he went back to Godhead. What an amazing example. He was such an outstanding person in a negative way. Who could be as demoniac as him? It would be very difficult. But despite everything, and his small performance of devotional service, still he went back to Godhead. So like this, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are going hand in hand. And in Tattva Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami, he is analyzing, he's looking at the question, how can we understand what is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita? By extension, he's also asking, how can we understand what is the message of Bhagavad Gita, because the two are linked so strongly. So how are we going to understand the message? Are we going to just sit down and read it and just with our own minds try and do our own analysis? So Jiva Goswami makes a very important point when it comes to to really trying to understand what is the message of the Bhagavatam. What is the message of Bhagavad Gita? What is the essence? What is Krishna trying to achieve? What is he trying to convince us of? So, Jiva Goswami makes a very important point. He says, if you want to understand what is the message of a particular book written by, spoken by a particular person, you have to understand the consciousness of the author. You have to understand the desire of the author. In other words, you have to understand him. Who is he? What is his life? What is his understanding of life? So in the case of Srimad Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami then goes into an analysis of the consciousness of Sukadeva Goswami. Well, actually, first of all, he goes into an analysis of Srila Vyasadeva, because Sukadeva Goswami's Srimad Bhagavatam is simply an expansion on the Bhagavatam of Vyas. So first of all, what is the consciousness of Vyas? How does he see life? What is his conviction of what is life and what we should do in life? So he analyzes the consciousness of Vyas, the realization of Vyas. That is there in the beginning of the Bhagavatam when Vyas meets Narada. So Vyas had already compiled a version of Srimad Bhagavatam, or all the Vedic literatures, including a version of Srimad Bhagavatam called the Bhagavat Purana. But still he was not feeling satisfied, so Narada came in and instructed him, you have to really point out Krishna. You have to clarify. The point is Krishna. You have to clarify. The point is devotional service. You make these things clear. Until you do that, you won't feel satisfied. So then, under the instruction of Narad, Vyas went into a devotional trance. This is described in the Bhagavatam. And then he realized the Srimad Bhagavatam more or less as we have it. At least much closer to what we have it. A purely Krishna conscious form of Srimad Bhagavatam. Completely full of devotional service, the glories of devotional service, the glories of devotees, and the glories of Krishna and his, the way he deals with his devotees. This is what Vyas did. And he spoke that to Sukadeva Goswami. So then Jiva Goswami goes into an analysis of the realization, the understanding, the consciousness of Sukadeva Goswami, who then expanded on Vyasadeva's Srimad Bhagavatam and presented it to Maharaj Parikshit. So he makes it clear. He points to the different verses describing the mentality, the understanding of Sukadeva Goswami. And how clear it is that really Sukadeva Goswami is a devotee. He's glorifying Krishna. He's advocating the process of devotional service. And this is what Srimad Bhagavatam is. So in this way, Jiva Goswami establishes what is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he explains that when we find verses which appear to be, at least they're describing some other process, making what could be construed as perhaps a different point, but it's not really about that other process. It's not advocating that process. It's not advocating that other point. It is just presenting Krishna and Krishna consciousness from a slightly different perspective, like sometimes he describes the Brahman feature, the impersonal Brahman feature, how great it is, how wonderful it is. People can say, and people do say, he's actually advocating Brahman realization. But he's already, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, explained that anti tat tat vad vidas tatvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabjite, that the supreme absolute truth, that advaya gyan, that one absolute truth, is manifest in three features: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So when he talks about Brahman and how wonderful it is simply in the context of Brahman being one of these three features of the absolute truth, the supreme of which is Bhagavan. So when it comes to Bhagavad Gita, of course the situation is even easier to understand in that sense, in that it is spoken by Krishna himself. And there is no doubt at all, there should be no doubt, what is Krishna's realization about himself? What does he think about himself? Jiva Goswami, in another one of his literatures, he says, if you ask Balaram, who is God? You know what Balaram will say? Balaram says, Krishna. He's also God. But he doesn't say, I'm God. You ask Balaram, who is God? He'll immediately say, Krishna. You ask Krishna, who is God? Jiva Goswami says, Krishna will say, me. This is, a difference. You ask any form of the Lord, who is God? They'll all say, Krishna. But you ask Krishna, who's God? Krishna will say, me. Yes. So we should understand, what is Krishna's position on himself? How does he see himself? That's clear. Mata parataram nanyat. There's no truth superior to me. Everything is resting on me as pearls are strung on a thread. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. From me, sarvasya prabhavo means, from me everything is generated. Mata sarvam pravartate means, from me everything is generated. Oh, is actually the same statement, just using different words, Sanskrit words. Prabhupada translates as Krishna's saying that from me come all spiritual and material worlds, which is everything. This is what Krishna is saying. So there's no doubt, Krishna is saying, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what should you do about it? Should you do karma yoga? Well, it's a start. Should you do jnana yoga? Only in the sense that it may help you understand me. But otherwise, what you should do, Krishna, right at the end of Bhagavad Gita, actually we read the verses last night, Krishna right at the end of Bhagavad Gita makes it so clear in verse 64. Sarva guyatamam buya shrinu me paramam vacha ishtosi me dridhamiti tato vakshyamite hitam. Because you're my very dear friend, I'm speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. Paramam vacha, may paramam vacha, my supreme words. Sarva guyatamam buya, about the most confidential subject matter. What is that? Manmana bhava madbhakto, madhyaji mam namaskuru. Mame vaishyasi satyam te, pratijane priyosi me. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you'll come to me without fail. I promise you this, because you are my very dear friend. Sarva dharman parichajya, mam ekam sharanam vraja, aham tvam sarva papebhyo, moksha ishami mashuchaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So, this is Krishna's conclusion in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's conclusion. Just become a devotee. Just surrender unto me. Just give up anything else. We didn't mention it last night, but Srila Prabhupada does make the point that this word parityajya, which Prabhupada translates as abandon all dharmas, other dharmas, this word is a very strong word. It is not just like, you know, just leave them, just put them aside. Parityajya is such a word, strong word. It means like throw them away. This is the sense. Just throw them out the window. Just get rid of them. This is the actual sense of parityajya. Not just, well, you know, don't worry about it. We can, you know, we won't bother with that. Not like that. Parityajya. Well, Prabhupada uses the word abandon, which is often used in nautical circumstances. Abandon ship. The ship is sinking. Get off it. Get away before it's too late. So in that sense, the message of Bhagavad Gita is watch out for other forms of dharma, particularly if you think they are ends in themselves. If you see them as steps to bhakti, that is another thing. But if you accept them as ends in themselves, watch out, because in the name of dharma, you will fall down in due course. Unless you actually apply them in the context of being processes to help you come to devotional service, they themselves will be your downfall in due course. So abandon them. Get rid of them. Just focus on me, on devotional service only. Nothing else. Avoid anything else. And just think of me, become my devotee, worship me, glorify me. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question, Maharajas? Dependent. Right. Well, actually, Jiva Goswami makes the point that that verse is a secondary Paribhas Sutra in Srimad Bhagavatam. Paribhas Sutra meaning definitive verse, which is establishing the message of a particular book. What the book's about. What an interesting sounding ringtone. Very jolly and bouncy. So Jiva Goswami says the Paribhas Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam is the Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam verse 1328. Establishing Krishna is the original supreme personality of Godhead. But he says then there's a secondary verse which is taking that verse and then just expanding it a little further. So it's that verse, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdhyate, that Krishna, the absolute truth, can also, should also be understood as Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. And we see in Srimad Bhagavatam that there is a certain amount of discussion of Brahman. There's certainly a certain amount of discussion of Paramatma, although mainly about Bhagavan, who of course is the main feature. And in one sense is the whole thing, the whole absolute truth. But in the sense that Srimad Bhagavatam, in order to really glorify Bhagavan, is also discussing Brahman and Paramatma to some degree. So we can understand that verse 1 to 11 is also a type of Paribhas, secondary Paribhas Sutra, as far as defining what is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, Sundara Lal Prabhu. Thing is, the devotee, generally, particularly the pure devotees, it's not that they want for themselves. But the thing is, Krishna often sends. Like we saw with Srila Prabhupada, he didn't want opulence or power. Particularly, of course, he wanted, in a certain sense, morality. You know, like he objected to the contaminations in the Gaudiya Math. He objected to that. But power, opulence, victory, he wasn't really interested in that for himself. But through his engagement in pure devotional service, Lord Krishna gave him those things. For that matter, Arjuna wasn't really so interested in opulence. He had been living in the forest. So anyway, the thing is that the devotees don't really want these things generally, but Krishna, to glorify his devotees and for whatever reason, to facilitate the devotees sometimes, he arranges that they get these things, and they may use those things in Krishna's service, but always from the platform of total detachment, and simply from the platform that, well, if it's Krishna's desire, then I have to use these things in his service. Is that okay? Mataji. Position of morality is that it is a secondary consideration. It's an important secondary consideration for neophyte devotees. Without it, neophyte devotees will not be able to progress much, and they'll remain neophyte. But once they become beyond just being neophyte and they become established as devotees, then morality as a sort of, you know, as a specific aspiration or goal or something that one is trying to address specifically and directly, it ceases to be such a specific factor which some effort may be made to directly address. And it just becomes a natural kind of part of the condition of the devotee. They're naturally moral. You know, they don't engage in activities, particularly against the regulative principles. Four regulative principles. They don't do those things. Not because they're thinking, you know, or making some program, you know, to avoid. A neophyte devotee will actually have to do that to some degree. Be careful to avoid, particularly if they have some, you know, particular inclination. When Kushakrata was initiated, Prabhupada asked him the four regulative principles, and he spoke them with great difficulty. And Prabhupada asked him, "What is your favorite?" So, you know, for neophyte devotees, they may have to make some plan. Okay, I must be careful not to get too involved with the opposite sex. So therefore, you know, I must not sort of chit-chat with them and, you know, all that. If there's a need to speak about some service, all right. But I won't allow myself to sort of just get into taking it further than that. So devotees will have to be somewhat mindful under, at least under certain circumstances, of morality. But for as the devotee advances and goes beyond just being neophyte, then there's no need to think like that, and they don't. They think of Krishna and serving Krishna and glorifying Krishna, and like this, they're truly in Krishna consciousness. But through their advancement, they're spontaneously moral. It's like a spontaneous form, natural form of morality, as opposed to a consciously executed form of morality. This point is made in Nectar of Devotion, that jnana and vairagya may be important in the early stages, but they're not like real factors in devotional service in general. Just in the earlier stages, they are sort of corollary considerations, and after a little while they cease to be real considerations. Is that okay? Mataji? Yes. Of who? Is there any possibility? Of course. That's why we're distributing them. We're not just trying to make money. First and foremost, we're trying to distribute knowledge about Krishna for the purpose of arousing their dormant Krishna consciousness. And of course, to get money also, to print more, so we can distribute them to more people. Plus also some money for the deities and for the looking after the devotees and purposes like that. So, yes, there's so many people who have become devotees through reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. I remember when I was first staying in the temple, I was staying there as a guest. And then I read Bhagavad Gita just over a period of like a few days. I read the Bhagavad Gita. And I came to the end of Bhagavad Gita. I closed Bhagavad Gita and I said, right, that's it. I have to become a devotee. That's it. So many people have experiences like that. There's one devotee many, many years ago in England who came and joined the temple, and he told us he got a science of self-realization, which in a sense is Bhagavad Gita, or at least the message of Bhagavad Gita. And he got the book somehow during the day. That night he sat down. He didn't close it, he just read the entire thing through the night in one sitting. And he came to the point, he finished the book, and he just decided, that's it. It's obvious. I have to become a devotee. And he did, on the spot. And he felt, you know, this book, it's so clear, it's so obvious. You have to become a devotee. I'm just going to give it to my friends. They'll become devotees. We'll all be devotees. And just it's just so clear, obviously. So he gave it to his friend. came back and spoke to the friend the next day. So, right, finished the book, going to become a devotee. And the friend said, well, yeah, I read a chapter, a few pages, and I thought, you know, it's not really for me. So it depends on the sort of readiness of a person, how they react. But for so many people, they read a book and it has such a compelling impact on their lives because Prabhupada's presentation is so scientifically powerful. It's incredible. And others who may not become devotees immediately or even in this lifetime, even though they've read a book or associated perhaps with devotees to some degree, but it'll come in due course. Yeah. So directly and indirectly we are distributing these books, particularly so people will become devotees. And you know, in that sense, the message of Bhagavad Gita is become a devotee. That's the actual message. You become a devotee. Whereas the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is not like that. You become a devotee. The message is more, now you're a devotee, so what are you going to do? How are you going to be a devotee? What should you do, not do, and how to cultivate? That's more the message, like of Nectar of Devotion, Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, any point, comment, words of wisdom?
When I read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Bhagavad Gita commentary, I got shocked. I realized that if I hadn't had gotten Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, and I had even read Vishwanath's,
that's a fact. Prabhupada's presentation brings out devotional service very, very clearly. More clearly, actually, in ways that people like us can appreciate. Just seeing you've brought up Coventry, I wanted to just conclude by mentioning Baladev Vijayabhushan's concluding words, some of them, to his Bhagavad Gita commentary. He says, I was living at Radhakund. And, you know, it's all Radha Krishna, it's Radhakund. It's the most exalted transcendental place of the most exalted transcendental pastimes. But he says, some devotees ask me, please write a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And I thought, well, I'm here at Radhakund. And Bhagavad Gita, you know, it's very philosophical, and yoga and meditation and sacrifice. And I'm here in Radhakund. So he says, I didn't really feel like writing a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. But the devotees asked me. And then more devotees asked me. So I decided, all right, the devotees have requested, I'll write a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. So he says, I started writing a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And it became as if Krishna had put me into a boat and pushed me into an ocean, the ocean of Bhagavad Gita. In other words, he had not expected it. It really sort of manifested as something very amazing. So he says, there I was on my boat, floating out into the ocean of Bhagavad Gita. Suddenly, my boat sank into the ocean of Bhagavad Gita. But then it became like a submarine. And I found I was diving deeper and deeper into the ocean of Bhagavad Gita. And as I dived deeper and deeper, I found more and more jewels in the meanings, because jewels come from the sea. I was finding more and more jewels in the meanings. And now I've finished Bhagavad Gita. Now I don't want to come out. So it may look like it's sort of for beginners, and you know, but there, it's an ocean, and there's different layers and levels in the understandings, and you can go deeper and deeper to the topmost. Go deeper and deeper and come to the top. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, he finishes 5 verses before the end. There's no commentary to the last 5 verses. And he says, I wrote a commentary on these 5 verses, but Lord Ganesh sent his rat and he stole the commentary. So he says, if he wants it, let him have it. And I will not rewrite the commentary. If he wants it, let him have it. Hare Krishna. Grantara Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.